And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. And Robert Bell is going to get things going with an introduction of our speaker.
My name is Robert Bell. I'm an alcoholic. When Tim asked me last night if I was coming, I said, yeah, one of our Fifth Tradition members is speaking by all means. I said, I'm exceptionally glad because I sponsor training. He says, oh, then will you introduce him? And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And all these things went through my mind because I had lots of stories I could tell about him. But there's a downside. Trey gets to speak after me. So I'm going to say a few nice things. You know, I can remember I hadn't seen Trey for a while. I've known him 8 or 9 years. And I hadn't seen him for a while, and I went to a men's workshop. And I heard this from across the fields. Hey, brother man. And I looked over his tray, and I hadn't seen him for a while. And he had been in this treatment center. And then they asked him to work at this treatment center. And he was hanging out there. But I saw him at the men's workshop. It's great to see him and reconnect. And a little while later, he came back to Atlanta. And I'll never forget, he sort of stumbled into a Starbucks. He asked me to sponsor him. And I sort of did this willingness check. And he may tell you about that. But you know what? Trey has been willing to do the things it takes to stay sober since that day. And he's got a great story. He's the kind of guy, if you don't know him, you need to get to know him. And I'm not going to take any more of your time. So, Trey, come on up.
Sweet. That was kind. I'm Trey, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is December 3rd of 2009. of course, that wasn't my first white chip. I've had many, many others. I'm kind of going to tell you what it was like, what happened, what the heck happened, and what it's like now, because that's what happened to me. I had 5 years, actually 20 days from a five-year chip is the day after Christmas, and of 2008, and I thought it a good idea to pick up a drink. Not doing things suggested by my sponsor, and you know, in the interim, about a year, well, probably about 6 months, just kind of fell away from the program. You know, it's some people's story, and it's definitely mine. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about my. My afternoon, I took a nap after work, and I get up to take a shower, and the water's ice cold. I'm like, this is great. And Katie, my beautiful wife, it's like, well, here's some matches. Let me see if the water heater will light up. I went downstairs, I light the water heater up, and it's like, sure enough, it was the water heater. And she goes, okay, hop in. If anybody's ever heard my wife's story, it's a blast. I'm going to tell you, if you've ever seen that Maxwell ad where that guy's kicked back in the chair with the speakers in front of him and his hair's blowing back, that's what it feels like. And it's great. It is. It really is good. I love it. I love my wife. Every day's like that. And with the outside issues I did, I kind of need that in my life. I love her. She's a sweetheart. I was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, actually Denham Springs. I was born in Lady of the Lake Hospital, not even 5 miles from Tiger Stadium or Death Valley. I love LSU and I love the Saints, and of course that has nothing to do with anything, but my culture, or the culture of Louisiana kind of evolved around weekends where we had crawfish boils, and you know, I remember as a kid, you know, 3 and 4 years old, picnic tables clear across the backyard, and these huge cauldrons and paddles, boat paddles to stir the crawfish, and you know, and them dumping them out on the table, and there was a lot of beer and a lot of people, and it was always a good time, you know, and that was kind of my perception growing up is that, you know, eating and drinking beer equals a good time. And, you know, of course, I ended up here and I found that it was a good time at first. I won't lie to you. I had a good time. But it turned into a bad time. I grew up in Denham Springs. I was 6 years old, and my parents divorced. My father was an alcoholic. I say he was an alcoholic. He might not be an alcoholic. He just had, you know, the same things I have. He's not part of the program. He actually was diagnosed with adult onset diabetes, and he quit drinking. You know, he can be a little testy at times, and I know what that comes from, because if I'm not working a program, I know what irritable, restless, and discontent is in my life. I know how that comes about. Me and my sister, moved. My parents divorced, and we moved to Shreveport, Louisiana, when I was 6 years old. And I lived there up to about 18. It was kind of a trying time, I guess. My mother really, you know, had a hard time trying to make ends meet, and with two children, and you know, my father was still, you know, he's still a partier. And you know, I'd see him maybe once a month. He did have visitation rights, and I do remember, you know, him and my mom, kind of, you know, they kind of fought a little bit, but you know, none of these things made me alcoholic. You know, I remember the first time seeing my mother and my aunt go off into the back room. We'll take this off. It's so hot in here. So many people. Thank you, brother. they went off into the back room, and I smelled this funny substance coming out from under the door. And you know, I remember my sister and my cousin. We were kind of like you know, just we were always together growing up. Up to the age of about 12, we went to the same daycare, so she was like another sister to me. I remember those two would be, you know, peeking under the door and giggling at each other, and I'd be like, what's going on? What, you know, and I'd go over there and I'd look, and, you know, they were partaking in a little doobie. And, and I remember watching that, growing up and, you know, peeking in on, you know, my mom and my aunt, or my mom just by herself, or a mom and a friend. And, you know, I found out where I'd watch her stash it. And remember those old Kleenex covers that you knitted up and put it over the top of the Kleenex box? Well, she stashed it right between there. Too easy. I think I was about 10 years old the first time I got into it. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I really didn't. You know, I saw, you know, how she did it, but man, when it came to doing it, I didn't have a clue. So, and going to school, I had a lot of friends down my street, Woodcrest. I remember the name of it, and then Greg Gott, old buddy of mine, and he was actually the first one that showed me how to drink and how to smoke, and I remember skipping school for the first time in junior high. You know, we snuck out from the bus stop and went to the woods and chilled out by the creek. And I remember him, you know, pulling out something to drink, and he said, "You want to try some of this?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." You know, I remember seeing, you know, my family and friends and them drinking around the picnic table, and it was time. And I did, and then he pulled out, you know, a doobie, and I was like, wow, I get to do this finally. And I'll be honest with you, the first time, I did not get high. I did have that feeling of ease and comfort with the drink, for sure. But as far as getting high the first time, I really didn't. It took about three times. It takes practice. I had a great childhood, to be perfectly honest with you. My mother did everything she could and gave us everything we wanted. Growing up, me and my sister, she did everything she could, and she was going to school at the same time, she did the best she could, and I look back on that now, and I'm like, man, she was really, I think that's where I got my work ethic. She was a really hard worker, and me and my sister were latchkey kids. We could get off the bus and get home, and mom wasn't there for another hour or so. went on with me and Greg Gott. I mean, we were like two peas in a pod, man. We did some really crazy stuff. I remember this pond down the road. Me, him, and his next door neighbor Reese jumping in this pond one day, and there's a little island out in the middle. I don't know if it was just a settling pond for sewage or what, man. But we were kids, and who cared, I was beyond that third time trying with the doobie, and I was okay with swimming and poop. I didn't care. Yeah, let's swim in it. We're swimming over to the island, and Reese, I didn't know how to swim. Okay. He's about midway, and it was probably not even from me to the windows, okay, to the island. We were going to set up and do our thing. We were about halfway across. He started struggling, and I went back, and I'm no lifeguard. I'm going to tell you this. I tried to get my arms around him. I couldn't do it. This was, a pretty scary point. This kid was basically had me by the head and by the shoulders, and it was trying to climb on top of me, and there was no bottom. And all I could remember was looking up, saying, "Man, this is a bad situation." And Greg Gott actually pulled that boy off of me and pulled him to shore. And I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him that day. Of course, there's many of those stories on later, I'll let y'all in on those. But that was probably my first near-death experience, and I look on it now, and I'm all the times that that God put me so easily at the doorsteps of Alcoholics Anonymous, how He had a purpose for me, and I never really saw that. Until this last go around, in my teens, I kind of bounced back and forth between my mother and my dad's house. He lived in Baton Rouge. She lived in Shreveport, and I was just I guess that's where I honed in my manipulating skills. Was going between my father and my mother's house, and I'd play one, off the other, and they'd be like, "Oh, well, come stay with me, come stay with me." Dad would buy me a car, and then I'd be like, "You're being too mean and too strict. I'm gonna call mom and, oh, come up here and stay. It's gonna be okay." And I did that for a couple of years, and I was 16 years old, and I met this cute little cheerleader at Airline High School. And I'm going to tell you this story. We were having pizza one night, drinking, and we were having a good time, and I was at her house, and her mother was off taking care of her grandmother, I believe, at the time. And, you know, I was like, Lori, are you sure nobody's going to come home tonight or anything? No, man. No. So we, you know, we're doing it up all naked and eating pizza, you know. And I'm like, this is great, you know. I'm sitting on the couch and I hear, I'm like, who would be coming here tonight? And she goes, I don't know. And I'm like, well, I'm going into the room. And I heard her mother, when I was in, I hid in the closet and I pulled these clothes, a dress or something. I was in the very back and I pulled it under my knees and I got down. And I have no clothes on, okay? This is not a good situation. And I heard her mother come into the door and she was screaming. Because she saw, I guess she saw me, I'm sure, as she walked by the window to the front door. And I'm like, this is so bad. This is so bad. And I hear her coming through. I hear her stomping through that house. And I'm like, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be good. She's, you know, I can hear her in there rustling around in Lori's room. And she's looking under the bed. And then I hear the closet door open. You know, it was one of those sliding door closets. And bam! And I'm like, this isn't good. This isn't good. And she starts pulling the clothes back. And I hold on to that dress with all my might, man. But she yanks it. She yanks it again. And she pulls it. And there's Trey naked. And she goes, get out of my house. I'm going to have a warrant. And you can't come around my daughter. And I'm like, man, she invited me over here. Takes two. Right? So, needless to say, in another year at I was about to turn 17. I had a daughter by her. Her name's Chelsea Hillman. Beautiful. I was there when she was born. Cut the umbilical cord and all that. It was an amazing experience. But at about that time, you know, my drinking and using started to escalate. Me and Lori did try to settle down. Well, she tried to settle down. I wasn't in for the long haul. You know, I had other plans, and my father wanted me to come down and work with him. He was a machinist at a chemical plant off the Mississippi River, and in Baton Rouge, and he wanted me to be a welder, and I went to welding school. I've never welded since, but I learned how to do it. That was kind of a pretty hectic time. You know, my dad was really putting the thumb down on me, and you know, I think what he thought I needed was discipline at the time, and I can see that. You know, you couldn't tie me down. I mean, I was just old country boy and set in my ways. I was just going to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. After getting out of welding school, he actually got me a job, which I didn't keep for more than a month, and I moved here to Atlanta. My mother had moved here a couple of years since, and I was like, I'm gonna go to the big city. And I moved here in 89. Whew. Man. I just remember showing up here, man. I kind of look like what's his name, Guns N' Roses, in that video where he gets off the bus, and I can remember I had the mullet going on, man. I had my pants rolled up. I didn't know that y'all weren't into that, you know, and it was quite a shocker. Thank God my cousin was here, man. She helped me along those, you know, few couple of years. She introduced me to a couple people, though, that I probably shouldn't have been introduced to when I first got here. But, man, I commenced a party. When I got here, I had two jobs. I was working at what now is, I think, a Thai restaurant or a Chinese restaurant next to the Mad Italian on Savoy Drive. It was a Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I was also working at Kroger in the dairy department. Dale, you'd be proud. And I was working both those jobs at the same time. I thought I had it made, you know. I had two jobs, you know, and I could work it, till the weekend, and then if I had a Saturday or Sunday shift, man, I was hell bent to make it. Eventually I lost both of those jobs. Made some friends. I lived actually in Post Apartments right there across on Peachtree Dunwoody, and threw a few parties there. My mother and my aunt were living there, and they went to Germany for 2 weeks. And I threw a party one weekend. The police showed up. I had a lot of kids from Dunwoody High School there. I went to jail for the first time for public drunkenness and contributing to the delinquency. But I was a minor myself. Those charges still were held up. I was so angry about it. You know, I thought I knew some law. I didn't know jack. But I commenced to tell that officer, I was like, you can't come on private property and arrest me. I'm going to throw a party next weekend. I threw a party next weekend, and they came and picked me up that next weekend, too. Those were my first two times ever going to jail. It all revolved around, you know, my drinking and my just not caring. I just didn't care. If I had a drink in my hand, I was all right. I had a lot of things going on in my head. You know, I had a daughter in Louisiana, and, you know, these are life things, as it talks about in the book, Trials and Low Spots, They were things that I just couldn't get by without a drink. That was the only thing that would calm the voices in my head. I drank plenty. Now my sister, she kind of learned from me how to do these other things, and I was probably not a great role model to her, and she bounced in and out of my life here and there, and she's kind of like me, fit to be tied. I mean, you just couldn't hold her down. She'd be in New York one month, and then Mobile, Alabama another month, and California another. It's like, you know, how do you move around this much? She had a means and a way. You know, she would do it. I commenced to work in construction throughout my 20s, and was introduced to cocaine. That's kind of like the nitrous for my alcoholism, you know. It was a great way to spiral down quicker, just like that, man. I was in a lot of trouble in my 20s. I actually went down to Athens to an AEPI party. The Grapes were playing there, and I drove a friend's car down, and we were riding around, and I think I was pulling around, and I took it too short, and the wheel bounced up into the battery, and I'm like, man, let's just leave it here. We'll go back to the house and use their phone and call the police and just tell them somebody stole it. You know, this is my great idea. We get back to AEPI, we use their phone. The police come and pick us up. They start driving us around we're going to find your car, sir. Don't worry about this. And me and the guy that owns the car are in the back of the police car. And we're riding around. He goes, is that it? And, oh, that's not it. Is that it? No, that's not it. And, man, he is inching his way back towards this park where we parked that, where we basically caught the front of the car on fire. I mean, it was the battery had been bunched up by the tire, and there was smoke coming out from under it. And he pulls right up to that car in that park, and he goes, is this your car? And you're like, yeah, that's it. Man, that's it. And he's like, I just saw both of y'all leave from this car about an hour and a half ago. I was like, damn. Jig is up. they brought us down to the Clark County Police Department and actually just gave us a ticket for falsifying a report. And they basically just took the beer out and dumped it. And those were those days. They don't do that anymore. And that was not too long ago. It was in the early mid 80s. And, in the meantime, man, I have been pulled over a couple of times. Cobb County got me for a couple of, roaches or something. I don't know, man. I was on probation there, and, I went to Columbia, South Carolina. I was on the way there, man. I see all these cops on I-20. And it's me and my girlfriend and a friend, and I'm drinking, I'm drinking a little vodka, just chilling, I got a little doobie in the back, it's all good, man, I'm just going to the beach. And I see three police cars inside of like 10 miles, state troopers on 20, and I'm like, my mind just goes against me as much as it can. It's like, let's go through Columbia, South Carolina we were going to Myrtle Beach, let's just get off the highway because this doesn't look good. We pull off at a Waffle House and I get some more orange juice from my vodka, and we commence to go through Columbia, South Carolina, and it's the middle of the night, man, and I've got one crack going through my windshield, and sure enough, man, police officer pulls around. I'm like, this is not good. This is not good. He pulls us over, and he said, I saw a crack in your windshield. I'm like, yeah, I know you did. And he said, do you have anything in the car? I was like, no, not that I know of. And you never say that to a cop, man. He pulled me out. He'd already been talking to the friend, not my girlfriend. I don't know if she was in on it, but the friend had already told the police. He's like, man, he's got reefer in the car. They get the reefer. It's divided up, and they want to get me for intent to distribute and all this. They leave the bottle of vodka under the seat, man. It's unbelievable. I didn't get a DUI that night, but I did get the other charges. And this is all in a 3-year stint. This Myrtle Beach thing, this Cobb County thing, and the Clark County. I go back to court for the Clark County in Athens, and me and a friend of mine, actually, still running and gunning, and I worry about him every day, but we go to Athens. I've got a cooler in the back of the pickup. Man, when I get done with this ticket, I'm going to go drinking. This is the plan. I get there, and DeKalb County's got a warrant out for my arrest, so I'm going nowhere but in the paddy wagon back to DeKalb County. Man, I'm going to tell you, my 20s are just a slew of run-ins with the law, and by God's grace, I did not end up in prison because the way I was going, that's exactly where I should be. They took my license away, and like a good alcoholic, I'm like, license, drinking, drinking. So for another 6 years, I didn't even think about getting a license. It wasn't until I was 28 till I decided I was going to get a license again. And I met this girl, and, you know, God bless her soul. She put up with me for a good long time, a good 8 years. But she convinced me to get my license back, kind of get my life in order. And, you know, I followed her down to Florida. She was going to UCF, she was living with her grandmother in Orlando, and I was staying with my mother in Ocala, Florida, which you wouldn't believe. I mean, alcohol and cocaine drip off trees down there. You know, I couldn't really keep it together very well. And she did graduate, and we moved back to Atlanta. But this is my last ditch effort. For all those vets out there, you know, happy Veterans Day. I salute you. I was one too for a brief period, and I'm going to tell you about that right now. My last ditch effort to, you know, I guess I was thinking about how my dad wanted me to get a little discipline in my life, and that's probably what I needed. You know, he seemed to do okay going through life and through things. And you know, my grandfather was a Marine, my dad was in the Army, and I'm like, that's what I need to do. I need to join the Air Force. That's what I need to do, and I'll be all right. I joined the Air Force, and I'm going to tell you, that was a wild ride. Quitting smoking on the drop of a dime. I was sitting in the airport in Orlando when sergeant comes rifling down the hallway, hollering, get in line. I was in the bathroom taking my last drag off that cigarette, man. It's like, man, this is it. I'm going to do it. Man, I'm going to tell you, it's like a midlife crisis, man. I'm 29 years old going into the Air Force, okay, with a bunch of kids. I mean, really, 18, 19-year-olds. And, man, it was an experience. They ran me to death. I thought I was going to die in basic training. I swear. You know, first they'd run you 10 minutes at a time, and then you could walk a little bit, and then run another 10 minutes. But man, I'm telling you, at the end, it was running an hour full on. I mean, and actually, I kind of liked it at the end. You know, I wasn't smoking, man. I got past the shin splints, man, because those were brutal. Because I hadn't run in a long time, and when I got back from basic training and logistics training, I learned to I actually went in as a explosive ordnance disposal. I was going to be part of the special forces. Man, I got in there and they told me how much I was going to make, and it was like a $50 hazard pay a month. And I'm thinking, man, what, to blow my hand off? I just wanted to hang out around the planes, get a little discipline. I actually went into logistics training to learn to load planes, to weigh the luggage or whatever I'm storing on there, howitzers, Humvees, whatever, and so the plane didn't go down. So I learned to do that, and that was a 10-week course right there at Lackland Air Force Base, where, man, you know, the thought that discipline might help me with my drinking, you know, what about, I mean, that's an awful idea. I mean, when I got in logistics training, I drank more with those guys than I ever did. And I was full on when I got out. I when I did move back to Atlanta, I was actually stationed. I was a reservist at Dobbins Air Force Base. And me and that young lady got married. She put up with a lot in 3 years. I commenced using and drinking on a daily basis. I could barely keep it together. And I only had to go in 2 weekends out of the month, and had a 2-week tour every year in the reserve. And man, I could barely make it those 2 weekends out of the month. I went a few places. The last place I went was Charleston, South Carolina, and we were teaching the Air Force or the Army how to load the planes, because they had the same career field, but we were just showing them with our planes and the C-130s, and which are stationed at Dobbins. And I stepped on that plane to go to Charleston already drunk and high. And when I got off the plane in Charleston, and they put us in the hotel, I commenced to go get more liquor and scout out where I was going to get my outside issues. And the next day, they loaned me the van, the company, or the Air Force van. And I'm riding around in this bus length of a van. I mean, it's huge. And it'll hold probably, it would hold about, I guess, 18 people in it. And I'm the only one in it. And, you know, I take my battle dress uniform off. So I'm in a brown T-shirt. And I still have my hat on. And I'm driving through the neighborhood. And, man, people scatter, you know. But I'm persistent. I just keep driving through the neighborhood. And they start easing out from around the trees and the houses, you know, even though it says on the side of the bus, Air Force. Government tags, you know. And, wow. You drive around long enough, they'll come up to the van. And they did. And, you know, I was issued, when I got to Dobbins, a government credit card. And it's only used for Billington. It's for hotels, food, and whatnot. But, man, I had no reason to be using this credit card on this trip, because we were fed, we had transportation, and the hotels were being paid for. I took this credit card out, and I went AWOL for 4 days, and I racked up about $3,500 on this credit card in 4 days. I turned myself in, and I can only imagine what the guy thought that walked into my hotel room, because I had Cracker Barrel boxes stacked on each other. I had crap in the corner, you know, paraphernalia, vodka, beer, everything in this one hotel room. And I can imagine what he thought when he walked in there. This guy's got a problem, I'm sure. Wow. Time flies. I thought I was going to be only 45 minutes. But I come back from this trip, and man, I'm in a lot of trouble. I make it to I've been to a couple of meetings when I was younger and through my 20s, but I never stuck. You know, I never really got it. Just thought I'd pop in for a meet and think I'd get something and go. I met a great guy on a Tuesday night at 8111. My wife came with me, and it was a big book study. His name was David C. And, man, I asked him to be my sponsor, and that's where my journey began. He brought me through the steps, and I was given the solution. And, you know, everything was working out better than I could have ever imagined. My wife divorced me, but things were still going better than imagined, even though those things were going on. You know, I had, like I was telling you before, I had 4 years and 11 months. And, man, I took my will back in that time. In about a 1 year period, I was dating a young lady, and I was dating a few young ladies, I lost my sister. She was found in Jackson, Mississippi, under a door in a vacant lot. She was a heroin addict, and she just didn't get this thing. You know, that's not why I drank, because I was able to stay sober through that, help my mother out, and help with funeral arrangements. I was sober, and I was glad to do that for my mother. My mother needed somebody, and I was there for her when I wasn't so many times before. I was the son that she wanted me to be, and, you know, that was... This is a rough day in my life, and hers mostly. I was angry. I was angry with God. My mother helps women. She has a ministry in Florida, and she goes to jail and recruits these women to come into a shelter where they have a different 12-step program, but it's she's helping women, and I was angry with God. You know, I was like, why couldn't, you know, really, like, why couldn't you help my sister when my mother's doing so much for you? That's where my thought was. That's where my head was. I was very, very angry. I kind of dropped off from the meetings. You know, my sponsor at the time told me what I should do. He suggested numerous things for me to do, to talk to other people and other people that that experienced the same thing, you know, I put this in my rear pocket and said I got it. And within 6 months, I just kind of fell away from going to meetings. My prayer life wasn't there at all. Kind of shed sponsees and, you know, said, man, I'm really kind of tied up now. I'm working really hard, and I really just don't have time right now. And inside of 6 months, man, it was on the 26th of December of 2007, and I woke up that morning, nothing different than any other day, except the things that I normally did, which were hit my knees in the morning, which I do every day. I guess it was about 8 o'clock, and I thought, man, a drink would be really good. And I made it to the Shell station on Peachtree Industrial and thought about calling my sponsor. But I was, even if I would have called him, I would think I was too far gone. I walked into that Shell and got a beer and commenced to drinking. It was about a 2-week bender. I went to that after about 3 months of bouncing back in and out of this. I went to a Christian home out in Penfield, Georgia, and stayed there for 3 months, and then they asked me to stay on as a servant leader, and emphasis on service. And it was basically, I got $20 a month, and you know, I worked with a good company for 8 years, and I saved a lot of money, and I took out some money on a 401k and just took a year off, and I got out of that that Christian home, and it wasn't a month later, and I got drunk again. I came back in. I saw Robert at that men's workshop, and me and Robert had known each other for a long time. I mean, I did a lot of things around my home group, which was at that time the Mount Vernon group, and we'd go over to his house and go through the Big Book and the 12 and 12. And, you know, I kind of missed that camaraderie of just fellas and just kind of a close-knit deal going on there. I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, yeah. He goes, he said, you need to go cut your hair. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell that has to do with anything, but okay, I'll do it. I walked from the Starbucks at a Georgetown Kroger all the way up to the Walmart on Ashford Dunwoody Road because I didn't have, I was in a, I liked what this guy said, a fractional living facility at the time, and they weren't going to allow me to get into a car. But I walked up to a Great Clips or something on Ashford Dunwoody Road, and I got my hair cut. I kept my hair cut since. He brought me through the steps again, and I'm going to tell you, I learned a lot from that, from my last out. I have to be right in the middle of the bed. I've got to have sponsees. I've got to have service work, and I have to be vigilant in my prayer life, you know, because nothing has been given to me because of my own doing. It's all, you know, I definitely do have to take action, but you know, everything's just a gift of God as my understanding of God is my higher power, and you know, man, that went real quick. I need to break that down a little better, but I didn't think, I thought I'd be here for 30 minutes, but man, I appreciate everybody coming out, and if y'all want to hear some more crazy stories, I'd be happy to tell them to you, but my life is so much better, and there's, I can't repay Alcoholics Anonymous back, the debt that I owe, you know, gets greater and greater as the day goes by, and I appreciate everything, and everybody here that came out, thank you.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything ain't enough for nothing to me. I got a nudge from the judge, Lord, and put me in recovery. Put the plug in the jug. Man, I feel like I've been set free. Oh.
Now don't admit.